Hello, folks. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Federalist Files. On today's show, the FBI's entrapment and planning of the Whitmer kidnapping scheme, as well as the FBI's involvement of suppressing the Hunter Biden story, the fiery debate between Fauci and Rand Paul, and finally, most importantly, the theme of this entire show, the all-out war on the American mind. Hello, folks. Thank you for tuning in. I have a huge show, tons of information, huge breaking stories about the FBI. That there was Joe Biden being questioned by the media about the Democrats that wanted to fund the police, and what his response was, is there Republicans that are sucking the blood out of children? Almost like it's spoken from experience. I mean, you've seen the things that the Biden administration's done thus far and the things that the establishment has gone for, and it seems like Alex Jones just becomes more and more justified in the things that he's been saying. He becomes more vindicated over time. Now, the title of this show is going to be The War on Information, because right now we're in an age where it is an all-out war on who holds the keys, who holds the control of information. And I want to start first with this story about the FBI and their connection in the Whitmer case. I mentioned this very briefly, moreover, on that Revolver article that I read, that the FBI may have been involved in January 6th. There's some very good analysis that they had a heavy involvement, as well as I mentioned very briefly the FBI's connection in the Whitmer case as well. So now I have a BuzzFeed News article that recently came out. It's written by Ken Benzinger and Jessica Garrison. It's a long piece. I'm going to have another shorter version by the Daily Caller after I go through this. I'm going to go very briefly, and then I would highly suggest you, everything like I say, as always, will be referred to. It'll be the description below under show notes. I highly advise you to check out the Daily Caller piece. It's maybe like 3-4 paragraphs long. It's not a long piece, and it does a very good job of summarizing this BuzzFeed article. And I'm surprised we've been seeing the left-wing media coming out with surprisingly very good stories. We had The Guardian just a couple days ago with the NSO spy group, as well as BuzzFeed. And I just want to mention, speaking of spying, it just came out tonight. I just recently saw it. We're going to cover this on the next current event, just because I don't have the information on hand right now. Not all the information has come out. About Tucker Carlson, he was unmasked. The NSA finally admits that they did unmask Tucker Carlson, and they did a little backtracking on defending themselves. But we're going to go over that in the next show. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to get to it this show, just because it's such emerging news. So to get back to the FBI's connection in the Whitmer case, you have at least 12 confidential informants that were involved. Those 12 confidential informants were of the FBI. They were hired by the FBI to be there. So we're going to talk about, specifically, there's this guy named Dan. He was the Iraq war veteran. For 6 months, he'd been wearing a wire, gathering hundreds of hours of recordings. He wasn't the only one. A biker as well, who had traveled from Wisconsin to join the group, was another informant. The man who'd advised them on where to put the explosives and offered to get them as much as the task would require was an undercover FBI agent. So was a man in one of the other cars who said little and went by the name Mark. So there was at least, like I said, there was at least 12 FBI informants. I believe 14 people were arrested in this Whitmer plot to kidnap her. It's going to go on here. An examination of the case by BuzzFeed News also reveals that some of those informants acting under the direction of the FBI played a far larger role than has previously been reported. Working in secret, they did more than just passively observe and report on the actions of the suspects. Instead, they had a hand in nearly every aspect of the alleged plot, starting with its inception. The extent of their involvement raises questions as to whether there would have been ever even been a conspiracy without them. So essentially, this is what happened. This is an entrapment scheme. The FBI planned out the Governor Whitmer kidnapping themselves, coerced people to get involved in the kidnapping with them, and entrapped them and arrested them. Meanwhile, just as it said before, you have informants that were getting them the explosives. You had informants that were planning this situation. This guy, Dan, who was the Iraqi war vet, who was wearing the wire, he was second in command. So these people really planned the plot, coerced people to come in with them on the plot, and then arrested the people. So they really had a much heavier hand. They were entrapping people in this case. So to date, one defendant has formally accused the government of entrapment, arguing that the FBI assembled the key plotters, encouraged the group's anti-government feelings, and even gave its members military-style training. Additional defendants have said they plan to make similar claims when the cases divided between federal and state court go to trial starting as soon as October. Last week, the lawyer for one defendant filed a motion that included texts from an FBI agent to a key informant, the Iraq war veteran, directing him to draw specific people into the conspiracy, potential evidence of entrapment that he said the government inadvertently disclosed. He is requesting all texts sent and received by that informant. So yes, we have FBI informants, or rather, I like to just refer to them as agents, because if you're working on behalf of the FBI, you're just an FBI agent. That's the way I'm going to look at this here. So you have FBI agents drawing in people into the conspiracy and then saying, oh, get your friends also to come into this conspiracy so then we can entrap them as well. But guess who's planning? It's not like there was one head or there was an active group of members, because this is actually how sting operations used to work. When you had an FBI that had some, I guess, a decent amount of integrity comparatively to now, is there was a group. There was a group that whatever they were doing, whatever they're conspiring to do, whatever type of illicit activity there was, the group, let's say, was 12 people. You had one FBI informant hop in with those 12 people as a sting in the operation from a very low level, and they would be able to infiltrate and get all that information, and then they would be able to make an arrest after some sort of illegal actions were committed, or there was a true conspiracy to commit some sort of illegal actions. Whereas now what the FBI is doing is they're the ones planning the illegal actions. They're asking people to come in and join in on the illegal actions with them, and in turn, when they do that, then they just arrest them on the spot before they do anything. So this is a totally different situation. The FBI is actually creating their own crimes in this case. So it goes on. Last month, Attorney General Merrick Garland stressed in a speech about the government's approach to domestic terrorism that it is focused, and I'm quoting here, on violence, not ideology, adding that, and I'm quoting, in America, espousing a hateful ideology is not unlawful, end quote. But if the defense is able to undermine the methods used to build the Michigan's case, it could add weight to the theory that the administration is conducting a witch hunt against militant groups, and by extension that the January 6th insurrection was a black op engineered by the FBI. I cannot believe that BuzzFeed came out with this piece. Yes, this is a war on information, like I said before. You have the media, you have the FBI working on behest of the government, obviously, the deep state, the establishment hacks. They are working on their behalf to create this narrative that the ideology of the right wing is some sort of extremist, violent ideology that wants to overthrow the government, that we all fall under this giant umbrella if we're on the right wing. You've heard the left and the leftist media call us and characterize us as the alt-right or white supremacists on the right side. That's always extremist right-wing groups. It's always a characterization because there's a narrative that they're trying to paint. They're trying to invalidate anybody that is on the right side. If you're on the right side, you're seen by liberals, because I would know personally from people I went to high school with that I will talk to online, they think that you are a conspiracy theorist. Because that's all they've been told, because the narrative that's been painted by the corporate media hacks, as well as the left wing in America, is that anyone on the right side is automatically a conspiracy theorist. They play the most outrageous clips of guys like Alex Jones in the past, any type of conspiracy that he happened to actually be wrong on, because he's not right on every single conspiracy theory that he's come out with. And they'll play a video of him, and then they'll take that and they'll assign that intent to everybody else that's on the right wing. And they've been doing this now for years, and now it's becoming very apparent and abundant, because they're searching. And all they're able to grab right now is straws. So they need to create now. Now, not only are they painting narratives, but they're creating the group. They're creating really straw men. That's why this kind of works out. They're creating straw men. The FBI is creating the people to be invalidated now by the corporate media hacks. And then, in essence, they're knocking it down like a straw man. And they're coming out with the narrative. They're building up these straw men to respond with the narrative, to collaborate with the narrative. So this is the Daily Caller piece. It's a little simpler, a little bit more specific. So it's written by Bradley Devlin. The FBI's role in the Whitmer conspiracy. And straight from the article, one of these informants, a man from Wisconsin, reportedly planned meetups for the anti-government militia members, even paying for hotel rooms and food to incentivize some of these militia members. The earliest versions of the plan to take Whitmer hostage began at those meetings. Okay, so you had a guy saying, hey man, just come out and hang out. We're going to pay for your hotel room. We're going to pay for your food. And I'm the one planning and organizing this stuff. Another informant, a veteran of the Iraq War, and this is the guy I was referring to, his name was Dan, because they can't say his last name because it's closed court records. And by the way, this is all Freedom of Information request information that they got from court records. So this is all truthful data and information. They actually have a lot of the court records in the piece, in the it's in the BuzzFeed news article, but that one's super long. That's kind of why I'm telling everybody just to read the Daily Caller piece. I mean, I'm going to have both of them in the show notes, either one, whichever one you choose to read. So the earliest versions of the plan to take... Oh, yeah, okay. So another informant, like I said, guy named Dan, in the militia group based out of Michigan, he was so successful that he became second in command. Dan, who then worked at a post office outside Flint, became an informant for the FBI after he joined a Facebook group called the Wolverine Watchmen. At the time, Dan was 33 years old, was searching for a community of individuals who loved the Second Amendment and guns as much as he does. The Watchmen described themselves as a group of patriots looking to recruit like-minded individuals, according to court documents. Before Dan was able to enter the group, he had to answer a series of questions, of screening questions. So yes, this guy Dan, he joined the group. He thought it was just going to be, I guess, a group of guys called the Wolverine Watchmen. Okay, and then and then eventually, I guess it got to a point where he informed. This is what happened: is he went and informed a cop friend of his, and a cop friend of his went and informed the FBI. The FBI called him up and said, "Hey, do you want to work with us as an informant?" And he said, "Yes." And at that time, there was already a bunch of FBI informants in there that Dan, I don't know if he knew about them or not. I don't know the case exactly, but there were already informants in this group. So as one of the militia leaders, Dan was reportedly able to bring in another Wolverine Watchmen member, an undercover FBI agent by the name Red. Court documents claimed Red was a supposed explosives expert that could help the group get the explosive they needed to blow up a bridge near Birch Lake that would inhibit law enforcement's ability to respond to the kidnapping and give them enough time to escape with the governor. Court documents showed Red claimed that $4,000 worth of C4 would be enough to destroy the Elk River Bridge. The men agreed to raise enough funds to purchase the explosives. Okay, so this was for the most part, planned by the FBI. The attempt to get the C4 wasn't even successful in this case because the guys could not actually raise the $4,000 worth of money. And I think it was those individuals involved only that could raise that money, because if you had the FBI raise the money to purchase the C4, then it's really the FBI just buying the C4. So the people that were even involved in this, and I was kind of reading into some of the profiles of some of these guys just seem like pathetic people that just don't know what they're doing. Some of them, not all of them. Some of them lived at home. They lived in the basement. They didn't work. They didn't have a job. They blamed the government for a lot of their problems, which I don't think is completely unjustified. But these guys weren't able to scrounge up $4,000 worth of money to buy C4. It's either they didn't care enough, they didn't actually want to buy the C4, or it was that they're just like a gang of losers that don't have any money. I'm not really sure at this point. But to me, it looks like an entrapment case from the FBI. The FBI planned all of this. They had this guy, Dan, in second in command, the other guy that was supposed to, and this is the thing, they actually got locked up for the C4, I think. That was the original, I guess, probable cause reason to arrest them. And they didn't even have the money to buy the C4 either. They were going to get together to go drive to get the C4, and then that is when the FBI broke in and arrested everybody. It's just the whole story is just ridiculous, and the FBI is so far into our personal lives. I mean, we went over that NSO group story, how it's like there is no personal life anymore. There's no private and public. Everything seems to be public all of the time. Now we have to worry about the FBI, who works as an enforcement wing of the Democrat Party, of the establishment of the Communist Party in America. The FBI told Mark Zuckerberg to block the Hunter Biden story as well. This is a Law Enforcement Today piece. If you guys do not remember, Zuckerberg went up on Capitol Hill to talk specifically, I think, about the Hunter Biden case, I want to say. October 31st, this article's from, okay? So it talks specifically about, and this is just another story with the FBI. It seems like the FBI is all over the news. FBI is screwing so many things up. They used to have so much more integrity. It used to be like a job to be prideful of. They were viewed in the public eye as almost like hero-like figures or elite, an elite investigatory force protecting the nation domestically. I'm at the point where I think there should be a complete disbanding of the FBI. There should be a complete almost upending of federal law enforcement apparatus in a general sense, and it should just be a domestic law enforcement apparatus as well as an internal affairs that isn't part of that domestic law enforcement. If you've worked in that domestic law enforcement, that federal law enforcement, and let's just call it, I'm saying get rid of the whole thing, get rid of the ATF, get rid of the FBI, get rid of the DEA, get rid of all of them, and just have one of them called, let's say, the National Security Agency. I hate to use the NSA's name. Or the National Security Administration. Whatever. The National Security Administration, that's it. And then, independently, in internal affairs that investigates them all day. Because right now, who we have for that is the Inspector General. The Inspector General, they are hired from the FBI. They are hired. So they come from those organizations. They still have the loyalty to those organizations. They know people in those organizations, and now they're the ones that are supposed to be investigating them. You can't have it's like the government is investigating the government, and on top of that, you have guys that worked with those government officials that are now investigating them. The whole thing is, it's just a sham. It's a joke. We really do. I think that we need to disband the federal law enforcement apparatus and throw in a whole new complete system. It needs to be reformed. We need to pretty much get everybody out of there and just start cleaning house and get all new people in there. But that'll never happen. But that's what should happen. That's what needs to be done. Yet the FBI, working on behalf of the Biden administration, blocking the Hunter Biden story, going to Mark Zuckerberg personally and telling him that he needs to block the Hunter Biden story because it's Russian disinformation. So the Daily Mail reported, when testifying before a Senate committee on Wednesday, Zuckerberg admitted that Facebook had throttled users who were attempting to post about the Biden scandals because the FBI warned Russia was spreading disinformation. According to the Facebook CEO, Mark Zuckerberg, he claimed he was warned by the FBI to be on alert for so-called hack and leak disinformation, which he was told would contain troves of documents. And this is exactly what he had to say about it. He said, and I quote, "To be clear on this, we did not censor the content. We flagged it for fact checkers to review, and pending that review, we temporarily constrained its distribution to make sure it didn't spread wildly while it was being reviewed. But it's not up to us either to determine if it's Russian interference, nor whether it's true. We rely on the FBI and intelligence and fact checkers to determine that." End quote. So yes, when you say we did not censor the content, but we didn't allow it to be disseminated, that means essentially you did censor the content. The content was censored because you did not allow it to be disseminated. You did not allow it to spread throughout the internet for people to be informed on this. So unequivocally, the situation with Russia, with Hunter Biden, the Hunter Biden laptop, that is unequivocally true. It was left at this this computer repair shop in Delaware. The information on there is truthful because it is Hunter Biden's laptop. That's unequivocal. It is factual data. It is factual evidence. There is nothing that you can do about it. It is factual. The left-wing media doesn't. They didn't want to report it for months. And then after the election came out, they wanted to report it. And then based on polling data, it looked like Trump would have won the election if it weren't for Hunter Biden. The Hunter Biden story being completely censored by Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. So I just have Brian Stelter briefly talking about misinformation and his attempt to shut it down, his cry for help, his cry to the tech oligarchs to shut down any dissenting opinion of his own. Play clip six.
It's not hard to find anti-vaccination propaganda on the platform. We took a look, and this is the result. If you just search the hashtag vaccines kill, you'll see it live on Facebook right now, and you'll see hundreds of posts, some of them sowing doubt about the vaccines, expressing not just skepticism or hesitancy, but hostility, rejecting basic science and medicine. And as you look at that scroll, which we've kind of blurred because we don't want to show too much of that nonsense, you'll see faces like Tucker Carlson. You'll see Alex Jones of InfoWars.
So I think there's a couple of layers here. One, Facebook absolutely has the data. You know, these are the misinformation that you talked about up front. These kinds of sources, whether it's Tucker Carlson or Alex Jones or others, or a broad array of people who create the misinformation. Because remember, there's not people at Facebook making the misinformation. There are other people who create it, and then it gets distributed on Facebook and it goes viral.
Now, folks, with Brian Stelter, I think this is the fourth or fifth time he's called for the shutdown of his political dissenters, his political adversaries, okay? On his show, he always says there's disinformation, there's misinformation. Notice there's never a proving or a debunking of that misinformation that he calls it or states. On this show myself, I am one person. I do not have a team behind me. I edit, I do the research, I do everything on my own. Everything is in-house right here. I debunk leftist myths all day, every day. I do statistically, I do by pulling up empirical evidence, empirical data, studies, scientific studies. Brian Stelter doesn't. He just classifies it as misinformation, disinformation. He has some professional on to say, yes, we need to shut them down. We need to shut down the dissent. It is what I said so. We are the ones controlling the content that you're able to listen to. They do the same thing over and over again. I mean, I don't even know how people tune into Brian Stelter's show. It's the same thing every single time. And he never debunks. He's called reliable sources. I never see him debunking right-wing, like, for example, how I've gone through the CDC data and how effective firearms are in useful defenses a year. It's at least 500,000 to 3 million. That was through a CDC study in, I believe, like 2012 or 2014 to try to curb gun violence. So when left-wingers attack and call for gun control, I'll pull that study up. I'll pull other things up as well. Whereas Brian Stelter doesn't have to do that. He doesn't do any of it. He just calls it misinformation, disinformation. He says, hey, lackeys over at Facebook, can you guys shut it down for me? Thanks. That's it. That's what he does. And in this case now, it's for COVID vaccinations. COVID vaccinations, I don't know much. I don't really look into it. You have the people that think the vaccine has some very adverse effects. It's not completely approved by the FDA right now. I don't know if there's even one of them that's actually approved by the FDA. It's used as like emergency guidance right now. I tell people, if you want to go get it, get it. If you expect me to get it, then go screw yourself. It doesn't matter. Like, I'm not doing that. Now, that's your choice. If you want to get it, get it. If you don't want to get it, get it. I don't know how effective it is. I'm not really sure if I had to sit here and look at the numbers. in terms of people that have already been vaccinated, whether or not they're still spreading coronavirus. I think people that have already been vaccinated, I think they have a lower percentage chance of spreading it or getting it. It's very low. It's so minimal. It's like decimal. It's 0.005% or something. It's like, I think it's something like 1 out of, 10,000 people still have a chance of getting it after getting the vaccination. Now, could that be from herd immunity somewhat? Yeah, I'm sure it could be to an extent. Whether it's effective or not, I just don't have enough information on it. I don't really care enough because, to me, in my mind, it's, oh, if you want it, you take it. If you don't want it, you don't take it. So for me, it's just principally, it's about freedom and independent civil liberties. So for me, it really doesn't matter whether you want to take it or not. I just don't think it's the government's place. I don't think it's private industry's place either, because they're going to be working on behest of the government to tell people they have to be vaccinated to work there or to exist in society and live amongst everybody else. So Biden, and this is Biden now talking about getting kids vaccinated, and he had this town hall recently this weekend, and it was a disaster. The town hall. I'm gonna have one clip here from the town hall, and I think I'm gonna have another one later in the show talking about inflation specifically. This one's pretty egregious just because grammatically it makes no sense. The one on inflation is even worse because he kind of debunks what he says in the first point after the. I'll show you the inflation one later, but let's just get to this first one here on vaccinations. Don Lemon is interviewing him on this town hall. Play clip two.
That's underway, just like the other question is illogical. And I've heard you speak about it because you always, I'm not being solicitous, but you're always straight up about what you're doing. And the question is whether or not we should be in a position where you are, why can't the experts say we know that this virus is in fact it's going to be. Or excuse me, we know why all the drugs approved are not temporarily approved, but permanently approved.
Yeah.
That's underway too. I expect that to occur quickly.
Well, that means you mean for the FDA?
For the FDA.
Yeah.
So Don, I mean, if anybody can compute what he was saying, I don't know. I can't comprehend it. Don Lemon kind of comes in, he sneaks in and kind of saves him for the FDA. I think what Joe Biden's trying to discuss here is whether this is an emergency acceptance of a vaccination or if it's an actual approval for a vaccine in terms of children under 12 years old. If you want to look at numbers, statistically, children are at far greater risk of flu than they are of COVID. So COVID is not something to really be that worried about from children. Same thing with wearing the mask for a child. The whole thing is stupid. Wearing a mask for a child actually causes more inhalation of carbon dioxide, which can have some very, very adverse short-term as well as long-term effects on their cognitive development. It's called hypercapnia. I'm going to get to that right after this clip. I have, and like I said, CNN's a hack. They're a bunch of hacks. And if this was going on Fox News, this would never happen. And Don Lemon had to save Joe Biden in that case. Here's Bill Burr, the comedian, and Bill Burr, once again, he's of the left. He's a left winger. He's just not a far leftist, boot Democrat, hoof licking loser. Bill Burr, the comedian, talking about CNN. Play clip seven.
Got to tell you, my mother-in-law comes over to help watch the kids, and she always puts on CNN. And do you know what those f-ing morons are doing? Do you know what those f-ing morons are doing? They're f-ing talking about Trump. I swear to God, I cannot believe people watch that channel. They're so dumb. I don't buy it. They're a corporate news channel, and they're f-ing treasonous, un-American pieces of sh-. You have to scare the hell out of them. You gotta make them feel like they got a virus. Their house is gonna burn down, and that the Nazis are coming back. Can you imagine if that was your f-ing job, to just go on TV every day and lie and get people to be against each other and just have everybody just sort of walking around in a low to high level of hysteria?
We are in a battle. We are in a battle of information. And right now, that is exactly what they're pushing, what Bill Burr said. He characterizes it perfectly. perfectly. It is fear porn. The objective is to make you live in so much fear that you're willing to hand over more of your rights to the government. Yeah, sure, I'll put that mask back on. Sure, I'll sit in my house. I'll do this, I'll do that. I'm in Australia right now, in Sydney, Australia specifically. They shut down the entire city. There's about 900,000 people that live there, almost a million. You've had three people die from COVID. Because of three people dying and 100 out of 82,000 tests, they have 100 people with COVID. So they shut down the entire city. They shut down a million people's lives because 100 people have COVID. That's what they're doing right now in Sydney, Australia. That may be imported here into this country. We may be doing, that may be our policy soon enough. We don't know. These liberal states like New Jersey, the one I'm living in right now, even though the governor has an election coming up, I'm not sure what's going to happen here. They're going to say there's a second wave, which they're trying to push right now, and they can't even pull numbers out, folks. They legit can't, because they know the numbers aren't justifiable, because if you pull out numbers right now about how bad the Delta variant is, if you look at those numbers comparatively to last year or a year and a half ago at the very inception of COVID-19 hysteria, it's not even comparable. It's so minimal, it doesn't matter anymore. So they cannot continue to push this same game in the media. So what they're going to do is they're going to try to fear porn you without even coming out with numbers. Because there's any way to begin with the numbers before, to me, we're not persuasive enough to make me hand over my liberties and hand over my entire life. So I don't know how exactly now they're going to do it. I think a lot of liberals have kind of come around to this, where they're sick of living under the government. They don't actually realize they're liberal until they live under the government boot on their neck for a prolonged period of time. And then they start to kind of come around and realize how lefty am I? Maybe I'm liberal, but I'm not as left wing as I thought I was. I don't lick the boot of the government all of the time. So like I said, this is a war of information. And how is it that the Biden administration is going to continue to promulgate this idea that there's a mass hysteria of a new Delta variant? How are they going to do that? So I have this Just the News piece. It is a study on the ill effects of children wearing masks. It was a study by, I'm trying to look at the Harold Wallach. Okay, it was the ill effects of wearing masks for these children. It was causing hypercapnia. It's a pretty well-known study that came out pretty recently, a couple weeks ago. It has been retracted. It has been retracted. Why? For what reason? Oh, for political reasons. Because you cannot have this study out there and then tell kids to mask up and tell kids to get vaccinations. Because kids have been wearing masks for the last year and a half now, and it's been having some very ill side effects on these children. Hypercapnia, specifically hypercapnia, according to the WebMD, who everybody else, who everyone likes to listen to read, it causes anxiety, shortness of breath, daytime sluggishness, headaches, daytime sleepiness, delirium, paranoia, depression, confusion. Also, it can cause, in severe cases, hand tremors, sudden brief muscle jerks, seizures, pressure on the brain, which could cause headaches, nausea, trouble seeing, varicose veins, which I don't exactly know what that means, dilated superficial veins. So yeah, this is just an abundance of CO2 in your system and not enough oxygen in your system. And this is caused by breathing in excess carbon dioxide, which is caused by wearing the mask, because as soon as you breathe out, you can't breathe in the same amount of oxygen that you were able to breathe in before. So Harold Wallach, he did this study. He told Just the News that the editors at the Journal of the American Medical Association and JAMA Pediatrics did not tell him how he failed to provide in the words of the retraction notice, and this is the way they claimed it. They characterized it as sufficiently convincing evidence in response to criticism of the study. So they criticized the study. I mean, there's multiple reasons. They say this tube wasn't okay, this wasn't right, this wasn't right. This is what Wallach had to say, and I'm quoting, "I would actually also like to see how those conclusions were reached, but I am afraid that there was no solid conclusion," he wrote in an email. The key phrase in the retraction notice was potential public health implications, which suggests the retraction was political because some people did not like our data. So yes, this is the method that the left wing uses. They say, Well, it could have some potential public implications. So we're not going to go forward. We're going to retract the story. We published it originally, but we're going to retract it now. Here's the thing, folks. So we've had multiple stories that even Fauci himself comes out and goes, oh, well, I don't like that one. It's a retroactive study. I don't like this one. I don't like that one. They try to poke holes in science, which is okay. Like scientific, empirical evidence, data. That's okay. But why is it that there is no other study conflicting that study? Why is it that you leftist liberals, you love to poke holes in other studies? Why wouldn't you want to set a precedent with a successful study that yields the results that you're looking for? Or why don't you want to propagate a study that yields the results that you're looking for? Oh, that's because there isn't a study. Why isn't there a study? Because you guys aren't living in truthful reality. What you're pushing for, what you're propagating is not real. And every study that comes in that conflicts to what your narrative is that you're trying to paint, you say, oh, no, it's wrong because of this one specific thing, and we said so, and that's it. Okay, then why don't you rerun the study and try to fix that one specific thing? Rerun the study and see what the results are. See if the hypothesis holds out. Why can't we practice the scientific method? You guys preach science, 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 but when it comes to actually going through the scientific method and trying to prove the hypotheses, why is it that that can't be done successfully? Why is it that you guys instantly shoot things down and you don't call for a retest or a retrial? Or why don't you have some sort of study of your own to prove this other study incorrectly? Why isn't there one? And it's because you know that you're wrong. Like, these people know right now. They don't even want to go through that. They don't want to go through that process because they know they're wrong. So they're pushing things knowingly that what they're doing is antithetical to to the end result. They're just doing it to push their power on you folks and say, do it because we said so. That's all it is. It's do it. Why? Because we said so. So I have Mitch McConnell briefly, and he's just another establishment hack, and he really shows it in this clip. Mitch McConnell talking about vaccinations. Play clip 9.
97% of the hospitalizations in the country for COVID are unvaccinated people. It never occurred to me after 3 highly effective vaccines were developed in under a year that we'd have difficulty getting Americans to take the shots. But that's obviously where we are. I want to underscore in the strongest possible manner I can, and I say this with some authority, as you all know, as a result of being a polio victim myself and being very aware that it took 7 decades to come up with 2 effective polio vaccines. This was done in under 1 year. These shots need to get in everybody's arm as rapidly as possible, or we're going to be back in a situation in the fall that we don't yearn for, that we went through last year.
I mean, everybody kind of knew this about Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell is an establishment. He's controlled opposition. A lot of these Republicans are controlled opposition by the establishment, by the Democrat Party. They're just kind of in there to shake palms, make a couple extra bucks on their investments in the government. So Mitch McConnell, I think he's a little afraid. I think a lot of these adults, and it's very pathetic and cowardly, they're afraid of actually catching this thing and maybe having the chance of dying because they're starting to feel very mortal, especially a guy like McConnell, who's, I think, almost 80 years old. Really not much more to say on that, just it's pathetic and really makes it just gives the Republicans a bad name, really. So next, and this is probably the most important part of the show here, I have Dr. Fauci going at it with Rand Paul. I'm going to have 2 different clips here. In this very first one, Rand Paul asks Fauci if he's going to retract his statement because Fauci really actually lied. He lied in front of in a Senate investigation. So he asks him, are you going to retract your statement? And then also additionally, he asks him if Rand Paul reads off what the definition of gain-of-function research is as defined by Dr. Fauci's NIH. Play clip 5.
Dr. Fauci, knowing that it is a crime to lie to Congress, do you wish to retract your statement of May 11th where you claimed that the NIH never funded gain-of-function research in Wuhan?
Senator Paul, I have never lied before the Congress, and I do not retract that statement. This paper that you are referring to was judged by qualified staff up and down the chain as not being gain of function.
You take an animal virus and you increase its transmissibility to humans,
right.
You're saying that's not gain of function?
Yeah, that is correct. And Senator Paul, you do not know what you are talking about, quite frankly. And I want to say that officially. You do not know what you are talking about.
Let's read from the NIH definition of gain of function. This is your definition that you guys wrote. It says that scientific research that increases the transmissibility among mammals is gain of function. They took animal viruses that only occur in animals and they increased their transmissibility to humans. How you can say that is not gain of function?
It is not.
It's a dance and you're dancing around this because you're trying to obscure responsibility for 4 million people dying around the world from a pandemic.
So as you see, Dr. Fauci completely avoids any type of blame or criticism or accountability for funding the Wuhan lab of virology that we now know that there was gain-of-function research going on, which is actually against the rules of that funding the NIH. And that's really the point that Rand Paul's getting at. He says, we're not 100% sure if COVID came out of this lab, but what we are sure of, the U.S. government is not supposed to be funding gain-of-function research. And your definition of gain-of-function research perfectly describes what is going on in Wuhan. And then what he does is in the next clip, he kind of subverts this. He says, well, you're saying that COVID-19 was caused by our funding of the Wuhan lab, and that's just not the truth. We're not 100% sure if anything came out of the Wuhan lab. And Rand Paul keeps saying, once again, gain of function, gain of function, gain of function. Your description, your definition, in essence, is what was going on in Wuhan, and you guys funded it. Once again, he just reiterates it. So we're going to play clip 6.
Well, now you're getting into something. If the point that you are making is that the grant that was funded as a subaward from EcoHealth to Wuhan created SARS-CoV-2, that's where you are getting. Let me finish.
We don't know.
Well,
we don't
wait
know
a minute.
If it did come from the lab, but all the evidence is pointing that it came from the lab. And there will be responsibility for those who funded the lab, including yourself. I totally resent the lie that you are now propagating, Senator, because if you look at the viruses that were used in the experiments that were given in the annual reports that were published in the literature, it is molecularly impossible. No one's saying those viruses caused it.
It
no
is
one is
molecularly
alleging that those viruses caused the pandemic. What we're alleging is that gain of function research was going on in that lab and NIH funded it.
That is
you can't
not
get away from it. It meets your definition and you are obfuscating the truth.
I'm not obfuscating the truth.
Senator
you're
Paul's
the one.
Time is expired, but I will allow the witness to
let me just finish. I want everyone to understand that if you look at those viruses, and that's judged by qualified virologists and evolutionary biologists, those viruses are molecularly impossible
no one's
to
saying
result
they are. No
in
one's
SARS-CoV-2.
Saying those viruses caused the pandemic.
Paul,
we're saying they are gain-of-function viruses because they were animal
not.
Viruses that became more transmissible in human, and you funded it.
And you
admit the truth.
And you implying
Senator Paul, your time has expired, and I will allow witnesses who come before this committee to respond.
And you are implying that what we did was responsible for the deaths of individual. I totally resent that. And if anybody is lying here, Senator, it is you.
So Rand Paul, once again, he hits the nail on the head. He continues to tell him, you guys funded this. And then Fauci subverts it. He starts talking about COVID-19 coming out of Wuhan lab, which we can't completely prove that it happened, but we know that the NIH was funding gain-of-function research. We know that for a fact. We have the receipts. We have the documentation to prove so, to prove that. And Rand Paul, that's all he was saying. And Dr. Fauci goes on to say, well, any molecular biology says that there's no chance that it could have come out of, because the reported, and this is the best part, The best part is that the American bureaucrats trust the Chinese government enough to read whatever is reported from that Wuhan lab, read the articles and say, okay, so this is all you guys did in the Wuhan lab. All the bureaucrats over there go, yes, yes, that's all we did, Dr. Fauci. This is the only scientific research we did with this grant you gave us. And he goes, oh, okay, no problem. As if they're not on the side doing any type of other scientific research. Why is it in America? Why are we outsourcing research to China is the question that you ask. And I'll tell you why. Because China works with human baby parts, though they are filthy, they're disgusting in their acts of, though they will do anything for what they call science. They will go to that extra, very cruel level, which we're starting to see here in the United States, but not on the same level to the same degree that goes on over in China. That's why we're willing to give money to China, because they're able to do very inhumane things in their research rather than have it here at home. It is very disgusting. It's abysmal. It is reprehensible what we do, what money we give to some of these nations, some of these tyrannical, communist, authoritarian regimes over in China. And we really have enabled China to become as powerful as they are now currently. So I actually have something. Another thing is, I just want to play this on an off-base note. I don't know if you folks remember where Jen Psaki talked about if you are banned on one social media, you should be banned from all of them. And then I said, that's because they now want what the liberals want is a KYC requirement, meaning it's used in investment, this term, in investing. It's know your customer, KYC. That's the acronym. It's used to avoid fraud in terms of investment strategy. If you're putting money in Apple and then you're selling it, and then you're moving it to your bank account, if they don't know who the person is that owns that account, then who are they to know who the person that owns the bank account, yada, yada, yada. They don't know who to claim the gains on, the capital gains, who to get the tax money from. So what they want to do now, and Idris Elba was talking about this, the celebrity, because people talk crap and they troll him online, so he thinks that there should be KYC requirements. And this is just a very quick path towards getting banned from all social media sites if you say something that is adversarial to the regime. And I have Sunny Hostin speaking about this very briefly. She's on The View, and she specifically talks about it as well. And of course, you know, celebrities are going to propagate this because they are immune to getting shut down. Because really, it's not Anons that they're worried about. They make it like they're worried about Anons. They're not worried about the anonymous accounts. They're worried about anyone that dissents to the regime. Do you know how much influence a guy like Dan Bongino has on Facebook? He's number one. Ben Shapiro's number two right behind him. And if you look on Twitter, Matt Walsh is up there. Same thing, Ben Shapiro's up there, Michael Knowles, Candace Owens is probably, if I had to guess, she's probably number one conservative commentator on Twitter. She's very popular there. You know how much the leftist hacks would love to have KYC requirements on all platforms so they can just cut everyone at the knees on the conservative movement? They would love to have that. That's why they push for things like this. So check out Sunny Hostin from The View talking about this. Play clip one.
I really do, and I think this is a terrific, terrific idea. I mean, I am subjected daily to racist attacks on social media. I'm talking daily, sometimes in the hundreds, sometimes in the thousands. And it's painful, it's hurtful, and it's always from someone who has a cat icon, a flag icon, a frog icon, you know, all sorts, an eagle icon. And they are, I believe, just Twitter thugs, social media thugs hiding in their mama's basements. The things that they say to me, and I'm sure to many others on this panel, they would never say in person because they don't have the courage to do it. These are cowards. And, you know, people are always talking about ID necessary for all sorts of things, then ID certainly should be necessary, a verified ID before you start a social media account. Because the reason people are trolling like this is because there are little to no consequences because of their anonymity. And I love that Idris Elba put this out there.
Why I play this clip is because this shows how the needle's being pushed from the left wing. The left wing wants KYC requirements so they can kick you off, like I said, cut you down at the knees. And just notice how apparent it is that they're worried, oh, well, there needs to be accountability for these people that say these things. I'll let you know right now, on Twitter, you can look, I'm savage on Twitter. You can look up my Twitter account in the description. I am savage on Twitter. I am exposed. I'm doxed. My name is there. Everybody knows who I am by name, first and last name. The reason why they really want this is they want to be able to hold you accountable to your employer. They want to say, well, if you say anything that dissents to the regime, you say anything that dissents to what the public opinion and the public narrative is, then we can get you fired from your job as well. That's what people don't understand. They say, oh, well, they shouldn't do this because what do you think? Do you think they actually there are no repercussions for speech unless if it is a threat to violence. And threats to violence on Twitter, if you report them, that you will instantly have your account taken off. Instantly. If you even say mean things and you report it, it instantly gets taken off, especially if it's any type of racial derogatory term. You're getting kicked off Twitter, okay? Twitter is nowhere near Twitter, YouTube. They're nowhere near what they used to be. Years ago when you went on it, the discussions that happened, just some really, just some negative stuff, people fighting back and forth. You had some brawls, especially in the YouTube comments. The YouTube comments years ago used to be insane. Now they cut them down. They have these algorithms to shut down certain speech, what have you. So really, it has nothing to do with any of that. It's not about that specifically, because those people are getting kicked off with the algorithm. And if they're not getting kicked off with the algorithm, other people are reporting them. Eventually, their account's getting flagged. It's getting taken down, okay? That is what is happening on Twitter. That's what's happening on YouTube. I've noticed this over the past 10 years because I would notice the comments on YouTube, especially YouTube. And then as the years went on, the comments got soft. The comments, no one's fighting in the comment section. No one is saying any crass material. A lot of the stuff was just funny. It was mostly trolling, like cracking jokes at how people looked on the podcast or looked on the video. But that is no longer there. Especially, I've noticed a lot of conservative comments aren't there. For the most part, YouTube was a very conservative audience. And there's really not as many conservatives allowed on the platform or allowed to even show their opinion or display their opinion. And I don't know if it's specifically because people are actually afraid to go out there with their opinion now as conservatives, especially in a doxed account where your identity is out there and known, to come out with a conservative opinion. So I'm actually worse, like I said. And she says, these are people that would never say any of this stuff in your face. I have gone at Meg McCain on Twitter probably 3 or 4 different times. I would absolutely 100% double down and say it to her in a face. I would actually probably say worse things to her in her face than I would on Twitter. So what these people are saying is they want to hold you accountable to your employer. They want to fire you if you dissent or you object to anything they have to say. And what the mainstream, what the establishment, and what the corporate media tells you to say and what to think. This is just another way to control you. This is another way to control your ideas and keep the ideas that you have from being displayed, being said. Because then others may think, oh, wow, you know what? That's not so bad of an idea. Maybe I should look into that and maybe I will change my way of thinking in that regard. I mean, this is just this stuff is so communist Chinese, Communist Party thought control. And it's so apparent. It's so obvious. And they know, the liberals, they know that they can use the social media corporations, these big tech oligarchs, that they can use their power and they can leverage it against the people to get everybody to think what they think, and if not that, be just afraid to even go out there with an objecting point of view. So the pro-CRT, and speaking of objecting point of view, Critical Race Theory Group that was promoted by the White House, they took down their account, they made their account private on Twitter after getting scolded by Fox News. This is an MSN article, it's written by Ethan Barton. So the Department of Education linked to the Abolitionist Teaching Network. So the Department of Education was doing some sort of educational initiative through the Abolitionist Teaching Network in a handbook intended to help public schools reopen and use funding provided through the American Rescue Plan. Fox News reported this on Wednesday. The group's materials, including a guide the department linked to, pushes rhetoric in line with critical race theory. And here's some of the quotes. These quotes are insane. So after these quotes came out, they became public. Then you saw this company kind of go private with their Twitter account. So this is what's being given. These are the materials. These are course materials that are being given to the Department of Education, who's supposed to head the educational initiative federally for the entire country, which is just ridiculous. The Department of Education, if I could think of any department to abolish, that would be the very first one. So these abolitionist teachers should, and I'm quoting once again from the guide that was given to our Department of Education by the Abolitionist Teaching Network, and I quote, build a school culture that engages in healing and advocacy This requires a commitment to learning from students, families, and educators who disrupt whiteness and other forms of oppression. It also notes that social and emotional learning, and I'm quoting, can be a covert form of policing used to punish, criminalize, and control Black, brown, and indigenous children. It states that the standards for such learning are, and I'm quoting here, rooted in Eurocentric norms and don't empower, love, affirm, or free those children. So, learning, social and emotional learning is covert to police Black kids, brown kids, and indigenous children. And, of course, it's rooted in European norms, as in white people. It's white people's fault that there is a type of a social and emotional learning. And we should have a commitment to attack white people, white kids, disrupt educators who disrupt whiteness and forms of oppression. So hold on. So they're saying in this piece specifically, and this is being given to the Department of Education as an initiative for teaching beyond in this nation, okay? Whiteness and other forms of oppression. So whiteness itself, the existence of being a person that has a specific skin color is a form of oppression. Me existing right now, me being here, I'm Italian, I'm very tan, I got a nice good color over the summer, I work outside, that's my job, I'm a white guy, look at how white I am, right? I got a nice tan though. My existence alone, me being here and existing, I am oppressive right now. I am the oppressive regime by being here in existence in front of your very eyes right now. That is what is being told to our Department of Education to teach our children. So yes, this is a war. This is a war on information that is going on right now currently. And what are the results of critical race theory? I actually have an article talking about Africa, South Africa specifically, how there is a civil war right now going on over there. It's written by Chris Hatting. This article is from the Foundation of Economic Education. It states, citizens are told that if they do not have as much as someone else, it is always because that other person or group has illegitimately required what they have. Many in government and in the commentariat generally assume that wealth is fixed and that it can only ever change hands through force. There is little to no acknowledgement of the fact that the government controls every facet of the economy, in some instances blatantly, in others subtly. This state of affairs has steadily manifested to where we are now, a climate in which prosperity matters primarily on who you know politically, which leaves groups competing over government spoils. As we've seen, it's a recipe for violence. So yes, they have a communist-like setup system, socialist-like system in South Africa. In South Africa, the old president actually took land from white farmers and gave it to Black farmers. There was a huge supply shortage. Why is that? Because when they gave away the white farmers' land, the people that they gave it to, the black Africans, I guess you would call them, they did not know how to farm. So there was a huge food shortage, which in turn, now they have 42% unemployment rate and 74.7% of youths, which are 15 to 24 years old, are unemployed. A sense of hopelessness and frustration permeates the entire country. Now, citizens are told to vote to give the state more power and then their problems will be solved. When nothing happens, hopelessness often manifests as violence. So yes, there's been some very racist policies that have come out of South Africa. In this specific article, considering these are libertarians, they don't talk about those type of cultural issues or concern because they're not conservative, so they kind of cowtail to the left on this. They're not going to talk about how there's actually a race war going on in South Africa. They're just going to say the problem is that they're communists, which that is part of the problem. There is a communist regime in there right now that is part, or the former president. They're saying a lot of this stuff is kind of being spurred by the former president, who they're saying was a vehement racist against whites. And that's why he was giving away farmland. White farm owners just pretty much confiscating their land, giving it to Black people that lived in South Africa. So there's a race war going on. I have an EU Times piece. And it says specifically, there's looting, there's rioting going on, and whites and Indians, because there's Indians in South Africa, are in a joint coalition fighting off the black South Americans, which have spiraled out of control with recent lootings, crimes, and random attacks. So that's really what's going on right now. We have a huge race war, and they're saying mass looting is taking place in KwaZulu-Natal province, in particular, home of former South African president Jacob Zuma, who is facing corruption charges and who has been sent to prison for contempt of court after refusing to attend an inquiry into state capture when he held office. So, riots and looting reportedly initiated by supporters of Zuma, who is appealing his sentence, are particularly pronounced in Durban, North Coast, South Coast, and inland areas of KwaZulu-Natal, according to local reports, with the police also requiring military support in Gauteng province. So what we're having right now is we're having black Africans, South Africans, looting, rioting. There's tons of video online to show this. I don't have time to play it. It's also you don't really want to see it. And there's a coalition, and it's against whites and Indians. Apparently, there was a story I was reading before that they tried to break into I think it was an Indian shop owner's store, and he shot and killed a couple of black South Africans. And there's like apparently that kind of is adding fuel to the fire right now in the race war. But they're not going to cover that in the Libertarians because they kind of shill to the left wing when it comes to some of that race politics stuff. So that is what critical race theory is. It's communism. And it's through the scope of race that a specific group has something because you don't have it. And there's a very finite amount of resources. There's a finite amount of money or wealth to be attained. And that's it. There's only, let's say, $2 billion in the entire economy. And that will be it forever. And if $1 billion goes to one person or one group, that means that group is the oppressive group. Now, that is what communism is all about. That's what they instill. That's what they implement. That is what they advocate for. But that's not what capitalism is. Capitalism is about creating more and more wealth. So there's not a set finite source of wealth. And that's the misconception that communism has, because that's what communism is all about. And that's what critical race theory is all about. And that's exactly what goes on when you teach critical race theory, exactly what's going on in South Africa. That could be America in another 5 to 10 years if we continue down the path that we're on right now. A couple quick headlines here. Senate defense budget would require women to register for the draft. Pretty crazy story. That's a New York Post story. I'm not in favor of that. I think it's stupid. I don't think women in a general sense should really be serving in some of these combat roles unless if they're equipped the same way men are. If they can meet the same physical fitness requirements, the stringent ones, not the ones that they change to make different from the men. They have to be exactly the same as the men. If we're going to have a stringent requirement for men, it should be the same as women because we need to be the most optimal fighting force possible. So Janet Yellen asks Congress to raise the debt ceiling. They're going to have to raise the debt ceiling to continue to be able to run the government. That has to be done through legislation. If they can get that approved, then they're going to continue to spend more and more money for the next budget that's coming through. I think it's important right now to actually play this clip. I have Joe Biden talking about inflation at the town hall. Very interesting. Play clip three.
I seem pretty confident that inflation is temporary, but if you're pumping all of this money into the economy, couldn't that add to...
No, look, here's the deal. Moody's today, when our Wall Street firm, not some liberal think tank, said if we pass the other two things I'm trying to get done, we will, in fact, reduce inflation, because we're going to be providing good opportunities and jobs for people who, in fact, are going to be reinvesting that money back in all the things we're talking about, driving down prices, not raising prices. And so I sincerely mean this. Prices are up now, and they're up. For example, you're in a position where you're trying to build a house. Try to find 2x4s and lumber. Well, guess what? People stop working cutting lumber. They stopped doing it because the unemployment was so down. Now, all of a sudden, there's this need because people are coming back. And guess what? Instead of paying 10 cents, you're paying 20. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It relates to what, in fact, is now needed because we're growing.
So that was not very coherent from Biden, but I'll explain how he debunks himself. What he's being asked by Don Lemon is, You're pumping more money into the economy. Don't you think that's going to cause some sort of inflation? And you're pumping it into the economy in a way in which is unemployment benefits for people to sit home and not work. He goes, well, Wall Street firms who aren't liberal, but they are. Wall Street firms, by the way, are very liberal. Especially socially, they're very liberal. he said, Wall Street firms, they're saying that if I get some of these policies done, inflation will lower. He goes, let me give you an example. So these policies that he wants to do are to spend more money, to print more money, right? He talks about lumber. He says, look what happens when everyone's at home getting unemployment benefits. Look what happens, how high up the price of lumber skyrockets. And then everyone gets back to work, and then they work, and then it goes down. Yes, that's the point, Joe Biden. Joe Biden, yeah, they stopped taking unemployment benefits. They stopped taking your printed out money, and then it lowered the price. It deflated. So your answer, you gave an answer to debunk what your original answer was. You said, oh, no, there won't be any problem. We can just keep printing money. Printing money, don't worry. The inflation will go down as we print more money, which doesn't make any sense because you have so much value in the economy here. The value is set this high. If you keep inflating the currency, that just makes the value of everything in the market, it has to, not the value, but the price of everything goes up if the value stays the same. You have to match that. If you have 100 chairs in an economy and you also have $100 in an economy, that is a dollar a chair. You print another $100, but you still have the same amount of assets. Those still have those 100 chairs. So you have $200 now. Each chair is going to cost $2. That's just the way inflation simply works. The value has to go with the rise of inflation for it to stay at these prices. Okay, and then there's a little bit of a supply and demand side as well that impact that market as well. But he debunks himself by saying, yeah, but well, look at the unemployment benefits for lumber when people are sitting at home, unemployed, collecting a paycheck, taking printed out government money. Look how high up the lumber prices are. And now everybody's back to work. They went back to work and the lumber prices dropped. Yeah, because they stopped taking your printed government money that was causing the inflation is one reason it was causing the inflation. The other reason was no one was at work. So there was a very high demand because they couldn't meet the demand because the supply wasn't high enough. I mean, this stuff is so simple. And I had an AOC clip as well, but what she says is just so I couldn't even comprehend it. It was just so absurd and ridiculous. She's all over the place. So I decided not to play it. Maybe next show I will. I held on to it just for sake of time. Very last article I have. Huawei, the Chinese cell phone company, hires John Podesta, who is a Democrat lobbyist, which I find very interesting. I think they're going to try to enter the market in the United States, the phone company market, because they failed to do so because Trump pretty much outlawed Huawei. Because they're worried about any Chinese telecommunications company having an impact in the United States, which is reasonable because they steal information. They're a spy state, not like our government's much better. So that'll conclude this one. I greatly appreciate it, folks. Please like, share, subscribe. As always, let people know about the podcast. Drop the mic on people, as in my name, Mike. Let them know. Try to get, word of mouth is the only way this podcast gets around. So I greatly appreciate everybody tuning in, as always. Enjoy your weekend, and I will see you all on Monday. We're going to be starting back up with the Federalist Papers Monday, Friday. We only have a couple more left. We have like six more of them left. We're on 79. We're going to have 79 Monday, 80 on Friday. We're going to still have the current events, as always. Weekend special, all that good stuff. So we're kind of coming near an end, which I'm very grateful for. I never knew that I'd be able to get all these Federalist Papers done, so I'm pretty happy about it. And also, I'm kind of excited to get a break, but I'll still be always doing these current event episodes. So I greatly appreciate it, folks, and I will see you all next time.